Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hello everyone, and welcome to Pixels, the show where we cover the wonderful world of video games and try to discuss what's been happening in the industry. Wow, I managed to get through that one. Three takes was all it took. My name is Patrick Beja, and today I am welcoming our good friend Ed Mitchell. How is it going, sir?
Man, it's going great. It's nice and sunny and warm over here, and I'm ready to talk about some video games.
Nice. I'm back in Finland, so it's sunny. I wouldn't say warm. It's actually kind of nice. It's okay. So there, I have, you know, one and a half of the three. I'll take that.
Yeah, that's something.
Yeah. And also, you know, the privileges of living in Finland, which I won't talk about here. That would be a conversation for the Phileas Club. We'll leave that for then. So what do we have to cover today? More financial results. And as always, you know, we're not going to be covering all of the meaningless numbers, but we're going to cover a couple and then some little tidbits that came out of the conference financial calls that we got. There's some interesting stuff coming out of BioWare, Ubisoft, and a number of other things. And we're going to be talking about Quake Champions, which I played, a number of announcements. But we're in the pre-E3 month, so it's not like super-duper active video game news. So I'm guessing it's not going to be the longest show ever. Before we start, though, I really did want to thank the people who gave me feedback on the episode, on the latest episode, the last one. And overall, it was pretty positive. I was kind of surprised. I was expecting some negative feedback. And overall, people were pretty happy with the episode. For those who didn't listen, I did that episode alone. And I wasn't super confident with my ability to create an entertaining piece of podcasting alone. But apparently, people were not too disappointed. Of course, I'm not going to be doing all the episodes that way, but every once in a while maybe, and hopefully I'll keep getting better at it. But today there's two of us, and we're going to be talking about what happened during the Activision Blizzard results, investors calls. And I guess, I mean, Blizzard is kind of a pretty incredible company, and having worked there, you know, biases, all of that, but Overwatch is a billion-dollar title already. And, you know, it's been out, it's celebrating its first year now. Hearthstone is breaking their old-time records of daily active players. And they are also celebrating 70 million Hearthstone players, and Overwatch is celebrating 30 million players. In the case of Hearthstone, of course, it's a free-to-play game, so it doesn't mean the same thing. And in the case of Overwatch, 30 million players doesn't necessarily mean 30 million copies sold, since, you know, in some markets you buy playtime and all of that. But, you know, I look at Blizzard and where they were when Diablo launched, and there were a number of issues there, and people were starting to think, you know, StarCraft 2 wasn't performing incredibly well. WoW's popularity was kind of waning, and it was like, okay, maybe Blizzard has had their day in the sun and things are gonna, you know, it's still a great company, but maybe they're not gonna have a super mega hit again. And Hearthstone in the free-to-play area probably is a mega hit. I mean, everyone's talking about it. Everyone's played it at some point. And Overwatch now is doing it again. What the hell is Blizzard putting in their games? It's. I mean, I talked about it last time. I think there's a lot of care and artistry in those games.
No, Patrick, it's pure crack cocaine.
I mean, the way I look at it, I think I talked about last time, they make, you know, they want to make a lot of money, and in order to make a lot of money, they make great games that people are going to buy. That's a really innovative way of looking at markets. But I don't know. I mean, you're also a Blizzard fan, so we're not going to get some super critical opinions here, I think. But $1 billion game already for Overwatch? What's your take on that?
I mean, the reason that I think it became so popular so fast is, like you said, the Blizzard magic, but also the fact that it kind of was one of first in class. It wasn't the first of its kind of game come out, but it was the first kind of game that had the charm and the I guess the je ne sais quoi, so to speak. that really made it seem like something that was special and out of the ordinary, and the amount of care that they put into it, and the way that the game was pretty fairly well balanced when it came out. Nothing was too overpowered, or everything was overpowered, so nothing was overpowered. It created this game that people wanted to play, and people wanted to keep playing, and people wanted to spend money on the loot boxes and all this stuff. And they just found the right mixture of fun and seriousness and storytelling and gameplay.
Well, you could say that about older games, right?
I mean, true. It's just the same Overwatch formula. was completely new. You know, they managed to take something that they managed to revive the ashes of what was the fallen Titan. And then they created something completely new that was something they've never done before. Well, and so, yet they hired a bunch of people from like Turtle Rock and stuff like that, like ex-Turtle Rock developers, to create this kind of game. But this is really something new that they haven't tried before.
Yeah, for sure. And they succeeded really well at something they had never done before. But as you mentioned, they weren't the first, you know, arena shooter, champion shooter, however, hero shooter, I think is the official term now. They weren't the first. They were kind of in the launch window. But
yeah, for sure.
I mean, I know why, and I talked about it last time, I think why they have successes where others don't. But what do you think? Like, because they weren't the first ones, and yet they're the ones that succeeded. What makes this different from what was the other, Battleborn, yeah, mm-hmm. or Paladins, or we're going to talk a little bit about Quake Champions, as I said, in a little bit, and I absolutely know what's different between Overwatch and Quake Champions, between Overwatch and Battleborns or Paladin. I understand they're not the same game, and you know obviously there are differences, but what is the key difference that makes it different? I'm not, you know, that makes one super successful and the others not so.
So for me, I feel like there's a lot more soul behind Overwatch. And I think what that really is the developers are given a chance to do not only what they want, but Blizzard as like a corporate entity is kind of hands off from their, or it feels this way from the outside looking in, that they're kind of hands off from their developers. There's not a lot of like top-down direction going on. It's kind of when you're in the team, it kind of seems very collaborative, and they're able to work together. And so that I think those kind of products come out with a lot more soul and heart versus like Battleborn, which felt kind of lifeless. The characters didn't seem to jive very well, at least from my perspective.
Yeah, but Gearbox is a developer that has, although who is it?
Randy Pitchford.
Thank you. Wow, I can't speak today.
Pitchford.
I mean, I've heard things that, you know, he was. I've heard people complaining that he was way too hands on, and he was changing things last minute. And
right.
But it's not like Gearbox is not a developer that seems to enjoy the same kind of freedom. Maybe they don't have the same amount of financial freedom.
Yeah.
But you know, it's not, I wouldn't expect a publisher, like a developer like Gearbox, to be the corporate product people, right? But that's what you're saying. It felt marketing-y, ticking boxes.
Right. I mean, if you went to like a PAX or something like that, and you saw like the gigantic Battleborn booth, you would not disagree that it was like marketing machine kind of feeling. I feel like Overwatch, of course, had like the TV spots and stuff like that, but it really felt like they were spending their money where they needed to, which was on the game and not so much on the marketing. Gearbox is an interesting comparison because they have definitely grown a little bit more since Borderlands. You know, Borderlands was probably the first game that really did something for them.
We talked about Paladins, which is probably a third one that is comparable and in the same trend. And Hi-Rez, I don't think it's fair to compare them because Hi-Rez Studios, even though they did have Smite, is not as, you know, it's not a big studio, I don't think.
But Gearbox money, just is money and budget wise, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're definitely not a big compared to Blizzard, even Gearbox, but still, yeah. It's like a full, yeah. I see what you mean.
Right.
Yeah. But you were saying Gearbox is a full studio, but still it's not the same kind of
Don't get me wrong, I love the Borderlands games.
So do I.
But there's something about, I think part of it might be that with Battleborn, they were like going, it's hard to describe, but more like humor based, you know?
Versus, even more than Borderlands, I guess, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, you had the big, giant, hulking guy with the really, really tiny head as, like, their front man character. And Overwatch, they don't take themselves too seriously, but at least it's a little bit more serious. And the humor that's there is more of, like, kind of crack-a-joke humor than it is the entire basis of the entire game and the world is based around a joke, you know?
Yeah. No, I completely understand. It's like in Paladins, there was this cute little penguin that was a murderous a-hole, right? And that feels formulaic. And I think that one of the things Blizzard does really well is they give something for everyone. In most of their games, there is the humor, there's the heroism, there's the quirkiness, there's... I'm not even talking about inclusiveness here, which I don't think, you know, was a major reason for the success of the game, even though it's a great thing to have. But in all of their games, there are all of those elements. Maybe Diablo is a little bit less on the humor side, but still, you can find some funny things. You know, the equivalent of the popcorn movie, a really good quality popcorn
blockbuster. I was going to say the same thing. It kind of reminds me, it's very Marvel, you know, like the Marvel movies. They're fun movies that everyone can kind of enjoy, even if you don't get, like, everything. But, like, in Overwatch, you can walk down the street in one of the maps and see, like, a reference to WoW. Or D.Va, for God's sake, it used to be a StarCraft player. You know, it's the kind of tendrils that bring it into the things people love about other franchises, and they bring those into Overwatch, which I think helped it. You know,
Go ahead.
No, I was done. Go ahead.
The Marvel comparison is great because in the nature of the product they're making, there is a lot of similarities as well.
Meaning, it feels like a comic book, right?
Not just that, like the method, like the format, it is easy to get into. It's like a little bit more tame in the sense that it's less hardcore. It can be super deep, but it's not like when we'll talk about Quake Champions, it's like Quake Champions is a game for a specific type of person. And if you're not that specific type of person, it will never hold your hand in anything. It will not invite you in from a game design perspective even. But the Blizzard games are so much more, I say tame, it might be construed as something negative. I don't really think it is. It's like, it's not going to punch you in the face and tell you you're going to like this, right? And I remember talking about the Dark Souls franchise and mm-hmm. talking about my experience with Bloodborne and saying how this felt like a drill sergeant telling you, you know, you're coming in. The analogy I gave was like, you're going to the forest and you're like, oh, I'm going to have a walk in the forest. And the drill sergeant is telling you like, now you're going to go fight a bear. And you're like, wait, what? I'm going to what? And so the analogy went on, and I think it was pretty good. Go listen back to it if you want. But Blizzard is the opposite of that. It's like, oh, come in and, you know, have a drink and it's going to be fun. And it welcomes you so much. I think some players are like, even in some elements of game design, it can't go as risky. Or actually, that's not true. There are some interesting choices being made in Blizzard games as well, but I don't know exactly how to define it. It's not like a core game or a hardcore game. Like, images of Darkest Dungeon come to mind, or some indie titles which do one thing really super well and go, you know, balls deep into it. And the more rounded experience, again, it's kind of like Marvel films. I think some people don't like them because they're, you know, not enough of this, or they don't take risks, but the fact remains, there are incredibly well put together movies, and there is humor, there is action, there is some emotion. So yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting thing to think about. If you have some kind of explanation for why Blizzard games are special, I would be very interested to hear your thoughts. Even, you know, Valve games are more, they're super well, actually, okay, let's not get into Valve. I would have lots of loving things to say about them as well. Let's talk about BioWare. They are not only restructuring BioWare Montreal, which puts Mass Effect, I don't think it's not going to happen again, but I don't think we're going to see a Mass Effect for a little while, because they're taking their time with Mass Effect, which is probably good, but they've said they're restructuring the studio. I don't know if that's a consequence of what happened with Mass Effect Andromeda, but yeah, there's that. And they also were saying that they had said they are working on a game, an entirely new franchise, and that has been delayed beyond next year. It was supposed to come out before the end of March 2018. That's not going to happen. It's going to be coming out later. So, BioWare.
Yeah, it's a shame.
It's, I mean, kind of happy that they're not rushing to do things when they see mm-hmm. there's a problem. But it's good, you know, their game, for example, their new IP, delay it. It's fine. It's not ready. Don't put it.
Yeah.
So.
So the thing that I always feel about when games get delayed, it's like, yeah, that's perfectly fine. I already have too little time and too many games already. So
yeah,
take as much time to make it as great as possible, and I will play it when it comes out, I'm sure.
And at the same time, I really want to know what it is. But
yeah, that too.
Assassin's Creed is probably the one we're going to see this year. Seems like it's going to be a prequel. It's going to be called Origins. And it's going to take us to Egypt. That is the leak. There was a single photo, a single screenshot, very poor quality. We don't know where it came from. It looks like it could be legitimate, but it could also
boats.
Be something completely different. Yeah, boats,
it has
Egypt.
Boats. Yeah. I think they said something. I thought I read something, and maybe this was a different report or something, but like talk a little bit about some naval battle stuff, which is kind of exciting.
Well,
although Egypt and naval battles doesn't.
Well, it could be interesting. Yeah, a different kind of naval battle.
Yeah.
But Black Flag had naval combat.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. There might be something to that. Yeah, I mean, sign me up. I played one Assassin's Creed in its entirety. I tried a lot of them, but one, it was Unity, and I enjoyed it. And I would, you know, the one of the things that is magical about Assassin's Creed is the exploration of...
Yeah.
Right?
The, like the traversal and the climbing around.
Yeah. And being in that city, in that, you know, city, and the feeling that you're actually in there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Cairo and whenever they decide to do it, or Egypt more widely, why not? What else? Square Enix is getting rid of IO Interactive. This is kind of... This was weird to me because the latest Hitman did super well. And we're not sure if Hitman, if the IP is going with the studio or not.
I think they said that it is.
Okay.
IO came out and said that it is, and that season two is continuing on track.
Okay.
Whether they get the funds to be able to do as much with season two or beyond season two is up in the air. But it is still going to stay with the IO Interactive studio.
Well, and in that case, I think Square Enix might have too many things. I think they might want to focus a little bit because they've had the Japanese games are coming back and they have a number of Western studios. Maybe they're thinking we need to, you know, thin our portfolio a little bit. That might explain it. Or maybe they're looking at Konami, which is doing pretty well. That is a surprise because we've railed on Konami quite a bit in the past 18 months or so. And, it doesn't change the fact that I don't think they're doing their fans a service.
Yeah.
But their mobile games mostly are the ones that are bringing in the cash, and that's what they're doing.
I think they made a couple of smart decisions business-wise that made a lot of core gamers hurt, but it obviously has worked out for them.
Yeah. But, I mean, they're making more money than Square Enix. That is, making fun of Konami was probably misguided. I mean, we didn't make fun of them, but... It was like, oh, you're leaving the world of video games. They weren't really. They have Yu-Gi-Oh! And their baseball thing and their, PS, it's POS. Oh, how's it called? The football thing. I can't remember how it's Winning 11 in Japan and Pro Evolution Soccer. There you go. The club manager thing on mobile. And that's where they're making the money. They're not... You know, they're making money a little bit with Super Bomberman R on the Switch. I'm guessing that's not a lot, but they have their baseball thing also on consoles and Pro Evolution Soccer as well. They have the Metal Gear Survive, which is going to come out sometime this year. So they're still doing some things, but yeah, they went where the money was, which is mobile, especially in Japan.
Yep.
So, yeah, I'm still not happy about it. Right. So that's numbers wise what we learned. A few announcements now. Prey is getting pretty good reviews. I wasn't sure what to think about that game, but I went and tried it a little bit. I think I played less than an hour. It's not like I can talk about the game with any sort of confidence, but it was kind of a mindfuck, if I can if I can say that word. Maybe I shouldn't. And it's really interesting story-wise, but mechanics-wise, it didn't grab me. It felt really a little bit janky. But
so have you? I mean, you've only been 30 minutes in, so you haven't really gotten into the core of the alien versus human skills and stuff like that.
No, not at all.
But one of the cool things that I've heard about is that when you get a little bit deeper into the alien tree, the automated turrets, which you can use to like shoot off the aliens, they start to turn on you.
Oh,
because you're more alien than human. Right. So, so there's a couple of cool like meta stuff that happens with the skill trees and stuff like that.
And at that point, you're like, what do I do? because I already have my points in the. Yeah, it's, you know, it feels like the kind of thing, the kind of experience that would have blown me away 5 years ago. I don't know why, you know, or maybe 10 years ago. It's like, it feels a little bit like BioShock or, you know, that kind of thing where I would have been amazed back then. And when now it's like, oh, well, it's a good game. We have.
Do you get a similar vibe from it as you do from Dishonored, which is the other game that Arkane made, or the other like new franchise?
A little bit, but I thought from the very little bit that I played, it felt like Dishonored was more mechanically perfected.
Okay.
But yeah, that's also what I've heard. But it's getting, I mean, it's getting really good reviews.
Dishonored is very like about the traversal and the stealth and all that stuff.
Right. Yeah.
So it had a little bit more mechanics wise to kind of guide it, guide you through.
Possibly, yeah. I'm not sure how much traversal is in this one, but I mean, I don't know, maybe I'll get to it, but it's another one of those games where, all right, it's a good game, plenty of those to go around,
so. I think so I'm really loving Horizon right now, and I think that after that I might skip over Andromeda and go straight to Prey, which should mention something, because I played about an hour or two of Andromeda. It didn't hook me like the first one did.
Did Horizon hook you immediately?
Yes, yes. Okay. So I love games where you play with a bow. Tomb Raider was probably the kind of introduction into that kind of gameplay. But the satisfying feeling of like having a bow and like shoot people in the head and stuff like that. It's a good feeling. And Horizon does a lot of cool things with the storytelling. Like, you can go, if you go around and like there's little debris piles of like the old world or whatever, and you pick up like a bunch of things, and it's like they're called ancient, and then there's something else, so it's like weird ancient ring, and if you look at the icon of the item, it's a key ring, like it has keys on it.
Okay.
And so they don't really understand the idea of what keys are, so they're just like, oh, this is some cool ancient ring that the ancient people used to wear, and they're just worth you just trade them in for money. But it's just like it's the little things in the game that remind you that this is a future world after like post civilization, and these people are way outside of the bounds where they don't remember anything from before. You know,
that weird ancient ring is actually a. Makes me want to play the game. That's funny.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool. And the idea is that you're the one person in the entire tribe that can go and explore these like ancient ruins and stuff. Yeah. So you're like,
too much.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's good. It's good.
Okay.
It's
okay. Fun. Maybe, you know what? Maybe I'll give that one a try instead of Prey. Maybe I won't insist too much on Prey. I mean, it's getting good reviews. I just think it's not my specific cup of tea.
Right.
Didn't grab me immediately. Although maybe like a fine wine, you need to learn to appreciate it.
Yeah, you should know that, Patrick. Come on.
I also tried Quake Champions, and again, I've played a few hours, so it's not review or anything like that. But for that game, the difference was really striking with Overwatch in particular, because Quake is a hero shooter, an arena shooter, and it's the venerable ancient Quake, which basically started it all, which is trying to make it into today's world of colorful, funny, champion-like hero personalization-based world of FPS, of competitive FPSs. And the beta is open, I believe. It opened on May 12th, so anyone can go and try it. And so I had played it a little bit before, got into the closed beta, and the game is not at all like Overwatch. I mean, yes, it's an FPS, and you have different heroes that you can choose, and you're going to shoot people, so they die. But from every other aspect, it is Quake. First of all, if you think that Overwatch is a fast FPS...
you know nothing.
Yes, you do not know the days of Quake. And Quake Champions did not skim on that aspect. It is absolutely like super fast FPS, like faster than Doom for those who have played that one, the recent one.
Yeah.
It is like super fast. And even in the, you know, from the interface to the game design, it is not, I would say it is not welcoming to people who aren't already at ease with these things. It's like super PC player, PC master race oriented. The UI is really confusing, as are most games that are, you know, when you compare Hearthstone to other card games, there's also this element like you load it up and you're like, wait, where should I click? Like, what should I do? there's a little bit of that in Quake Champions. And from a design standpoint, it's still a beta, so we shouldn't be too harsh, but it's deathmatch or team deathmatch. So you're thrown in there and you have to win or you die. Like, you can't rely on your team. Not really. Even in team deathmatch, what you're doing is you have to kill people. You can't like push a payload or whatever. And even in the other modes, because there is another one that opened, it's super confusing. Like, you have to protect an area and there's a relic and it doesn't tell you what is where. And I think it's going to make Quake fans happy. And quite honestly, I'm not saying it's bad. I even enjoyed it for what it is, because I used to play Quake back in the day and I used to be, you know, one of those people. So I absolutely get the attraction of that kind of design and that kind of approach. But the difference with Overwatch is so stark that I would seriously encourage people to go download Quake Champions and try it just to see how different it can be. It feels like, well, it is a different game, it is a different company, but it feels like it's not the same media. Like, one is a game and one is something else. I don't know.
Do you think that fans of Quake will love it?
Yes, I think so. Okay. If you've played,
and that's probably what they were going for.
Absolutely, and I think they did a brilliant job. They, you know, mm-hmm. It makes no sense to go and try and hunt on the lands of Overwatch. You're not going to be replacing them now. It's kind of pointless. It's like people trying to make an MMO when WoW had already cornered the market. You shouldn't make a super wide encompassing MMO. You should make something that a specific kind of people enjoy and then maybe build on this. And that's what they're doing. They're making a game for the people who look at Overwatch and snicker, you know? For the people who say, all right, you Disney BS, I want a real game. And that's what Quake Champions is. And I think there is some genericity to Quake Champions. Like, the when you're the Marine, he goes like, he's like super dude bro, angry, gruff dude. And that's the kind of thing that we were talking about, you know, when we were talking about Battleborn and Paladins. Like, there's some very generic, one-dimensional characters. But in Quake, it doesn't matter as much, because that's not really... that doesn't influence the game about. The game isn't focused on, look at how quirky we are. The game is first and foremost a super fast, crisp, mechanically refined shooter. So the rest is kind of dressing on the side. But yeah, I don't think I'm going to be playing it a lot. It's like, it demands a lot of effort from you. You know, it's like, you can't let up for a second. And
yeah,
I mean, maybe it's an age thing. Maybe, I don't know, but I don't think I was ever really into those games anyway, mm-hmm. but yeah,
there's a certain kind of like thought and brain to be able to do this kind of things.
I mean, it seems like it's shaping up like a great game, like a great game for the people who want that kind of thing. One thing I will say though, the Bethesda launcher, holy crap, that is not a good piece of software. I know a lot of people hate launchers, and I don't mind all that much, but wow, the Bethesda one is horrible. Horrible. Like anyway, so get over that if you want to play Quake Champions. Darksiders 3 was announced.
Ooh.
A lot of people excited about this. Are you one of them?
Yeah. So I played Darksiders 1 back when it first came out because everyone was like, oh, it's a Zelda clone.
Right.
But so it's like not as good as Zelda, but it's still Zelda. And I was like, well, I love Zelda, so I'm gonna play it. And I loved it. It's Zelda with like combat, like actual combat, which is awesome.
What are the aspects? Everyone says that. I've played just a little bit of the first one and I think a little bit of the second one. Everyone says it is very Zelda-like. Is it because like the way the exploration of the world works?
It's
you need that item and the thing?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Very, very much like that. You go into the dungeon. The dungeon is puzzle, lots of puzzle, like heavy puzzles. And then you get an item that helps you unlock like the rest of the dungeon and then beat the boss. And, you know, that the very Zelda formula of dungeon, item, boss, and then all of a sudden that opens up another area of the world. It very Metroidvania kind of feeling. Darksiders 2 was a little bit less that. They kind of re-envisioned the game into kind of Diablo style. So you had loot that dropped, and it was more story-based and a lot less like item, like gated by items. It had a little bit of that. So I'm excited to see what they do with Darksiders 3. And the story is really interesting. It's very Diablo-like, where they have a bunch of references to angels and demons and from the Bible and stuff like that. And you're playing as the female horseman in this kind of world. So it'll be cool. She's kind of a magician kind of style as far as combat's concerned. So it'll be cool to see kind of how she's different from Death and War.
Mm. I've heard some people say that the combat felt a little bit Dark Souls-y.
The new one?
Yeah.
I could see it, but I would be curious to see how deep it goes. Because Dark Souls combat can get pretty deep with all the gear and stuff like that. Yeah. And that was the thing I didn't like about Darksiders 2 was they gave you all this cool gear, but it never really felt like one thing was any really that different from another besides just, you know, you do a little bit more damage and stuff like that. So having gear that actually affects the way your combat works would be cool.
All right. So you're looking forward to...
Yeah, Dark absolutely.
Souls. Cool. To Dark Souls, no. To Darksiders.
Yeah.
One thing you might be looking forward to, but you're not going to get, is Halo 6 at E3.
Surprising.
Sadly. Yeah, it's I thought with what they we heard about last week that we might see something, but so that kind of makes me wonder what they're going to be pushing the Scorpio with. They don't have a Halo.
Yeah.
They probably don't have a Gears of War, right?
Haven't heard anything from Crackdown in a while. Maybe Crackdown's it.
Maybe, but I think Crackdown is one of those things that some people are really, you know, hoping for, but I don't think it pushes. It isn't console pushing level thing.
Yeah, I mean, right? I'm talking more about the technology behind Crackdown might be something. I don't know. I mean, I played Halo Wars 2. And that was the first time I turned on my Xbox since ReCore came out. And even ReCore wasn't that great, and I kind of preferred to just play Halo instead.
Right.
So, I don't know. I'm kind of sad that if Halo 6 isn't at E3 this year, then that means it's probably not going to come out till next year.
Yeah.
And that's a little disappointing just because of the way that Halo 5 kind of ended with in a mush, you know?
So the Microsoft conference just got actually, I think, more interesting.
Yeah.
by the virtue of absence of a Halo 6. So
I wouldn't be surprised if they show off RDR2 at the Microsoft conference, just because Ooh. That was such that was, and if Microsoft nails that kind of exclusive or whatever, not as far as the game coming out, but for the conference, it would be interesting, and they could use that to show off the Scorpio for sure.
Mm. But didn't they have, didn't RDR, like the trailer wasn't it on PlayStation, like PlayStation branding?
Maybe.
I'm going to check.
I don't remember.
Because I thought Sony had kind of associated themselves with it. No, it's not. It's just Rockstar.
Yeah. Okay. So it wasn't any conference last year.
No,
surprised,
of course,
everyone.
Of course. Yeah.
And I think it was going to be at the PlayStation conference, but then they had the shooting happened, and they didn't want to show that stuff off.
That's
just because I think
heard,
it was in like a nightclub, right? And so they probably were going to show that the guy from our I don't remember his name, like going into a bar.
Right.
That kind of makes me think of the West, you know,
Mr. Marston. Right.
Yeah, John Marston. They didn't want to do that. So right. I don't think they have any like exclusivity for real.
A marketing deal of some sort, like Sony does with a number of other developers. I mean, mm-hmm. Destiny has that. Microsoft could. I mean, that would be good. As you said, I really don't see them having an exclusivity on Red Dead Redemption 2. That is just not going to happen because Rockstar, there's no way they could pay enough to make up for the money Rockstar would lose by not being present on one of the consoles. So
yeah,
that's
and
why.
So they have said that there is an exclusive like DLC or something like more exclusive for the PlayStation version of the game.
Oh, okay. So there was something.
So there was something.
Okay.
I'd thought about that too, yeah.
Okay, right. So, you know, in that case, this is usually a, you know, content marketing deal, which means they will not be featured exclusively at Microsoft's conference.
Yeah, so that was my only guess. So now I have nothing.
So, right. So now it's like, all right. Well, I guess we'll see. It will be, I said, interesting.
A month from now. It's a month from now,
it's coming. It's coming.
Yeah.
Have you played PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds?
No, but I've seen a bunch of videos from it because it seems to be getting really popular lately.
It is, like, everyone is talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
For those who don't know, it's kind of a DayZ kind of game, survival, like Ark, Survival Evolved, all of those types of things, developed by a well-known modder called PlayerUnknown, and so he was modding different games, and he ended up making his own called PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, and it's already sold 2 million units. It's early access, and the idea of the game is that you play with 100 other players who parachute down on an island, and then you have to survive and kill everyone else, and you have to be the last one, and it's incredibly slow and methodical, and of course, you know, you get shot once, you die. So it's you really have to be careful in the way you play the game. And if you die, you can just jump into another game. So it's not that, you know, you don't invest like you did in those other games, like hours and days of your life, and then you have to start from the beginning if someone steals all your stuff or whatever. But I don't think that's my kind of game, but what did you think? So you saw a bunch of videos.
Yeah, I think the idea sounds really interesting. I might try it for like a game or two, but I'm not big into the DayZ kind of games or anything like that. So
right.
I don't know how much it'll really appeal to me, but the idea of it, how it's like one person to survive, seems kind of cool.
It is, you know, the idea is really cool, and it sort of does its trick on me as well. But what I once I'm actually confronted with the thing, you know, as we've said a few times, I kind of enjoy the popcorn games more than the more hardcore stuff I've found. And in this case, the idea is cool. But when you actually jump into the game, what actually happens is that you're crouch walking for kilometers on end, trying not to be seen by the other desperate souls on the island. And when one sees you, they either shoot you in the head and you're dead, or like they run you over with a car or whatever, and your game is over. And again, I understand that some people love that kind of thing, but I don't think it's for me.
Yeah, I'm worried that if I played like one game, I would just die right away.
Yeah.
I mean, if I played two games, I would die after like 5 minutes, and then I'd just be like, nah, this isn't for me.
But, you know, even if you don't die, you're really trying to survive for the majority of the game. And I don't think it's like surviving as in, you know, The Last of Us, where you're in these beautiful environment with a little bit of traversal, or you're just going from shack to shack trying to find a bullet for your gun that you don't have bullets for. So anyway, it's coming to consoles, so everyone will have an opportunity to try it. And it is incredibly popular. It's 2 million already. It came out a few weeks ago only in early access, as I said. So there are a lot of people who enjoy that game. So if that's something you think you might like, go check it out, because it's definitely popular. This next bit of news is kind of a throwback to a time when the entire industry was all about MMORPGs. And I don't think I would have talked about it if it didn't have to do with that, because it's really minor. But The Secret World Legends is coming out soon-ish. And if you guys remember, there was an MMORPG called The Secret World. Do you remember that one? It came out towards the tail end of the craze.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's still like the people that love it still love it, you know?
Yeah. It's really cool. It's basically the modern world, but with lots of fantastical, like, Cthulhu and vampires and zombies and all of that, and secret societies, and it's kind of fun. And they're making it basically into a single player game called The Secret World Legends. So it's a separate title, and it leverages all of their assets and their content from The Secret World and makes it into a single player game, kind of, but it's instanced, and you can also have multiplayer, but it's not an MMORPG. It feels like a little bit of recycling, and especially the graphics are from The Secret World, so they feel dated. But I kind of find the idea interesting, of taking an MMO and converting it into what I'm sure is going to feel very much like an MMO, but alone. But sort of smooth the experience leveling curve and make it into a single player / multiplayer experience. I the idea is intriguing. I'm not expecting this to be incredibly popular, but what do you think? It's original.
Yeah, I mean, if it a single player experience, I'm fine with that. I don't think I have the time or the desire to play another MMO. I think the shared world single player experience, even if it's like kind of Destiny-ish or whatever, seems kind of cool. Mm.
I'm never going to go play that game, just to be clear.
I actually might.
Oh, you might? Okay. Did you play The Secret World?
No.
I did back in the day, but... Oh, okay.
But the idea of such a thing, it intrigues me enough that I might give it a shot, you know?
Mm. All right. Vanquish is coming to the PC, and Vanquish, we heard about this when Bayonetta came to Steam, and it's another one of those games that the Japanese developers are realizing, oh, there's a market for our games on PC as well in the West. Awesome, let's put all of them there. So it's basically Platinum Games putting another one of those games of their titles on the PC. It's coming in 10 days, I think. And the reason I'm mentioning it is that whenever we talk about games that people should play, Vanquish is mentioned. It's fairly old. It was from 2010. It came out on PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360. And it's another, you know, Platinum game. So it's not It might not be for everyone. It's kind of like Nier Automata, which everyone is loving and saying that everyone should play.
It's one of the original Platinum games.
Right, right.
You know.
One of those that brought them to the forefront of
Yeah.
So I've been told several times I should play that game.
I've heard that the game is kind of like it's very fast paced. So you have to do a lot of you play through the first set of missions or you finish the game basically, and you're like, wow, that was really fast. Mm. Like it, but the idea is that you go back and play it and you try to get better, but also I think there's also like a kind of new game plus kind of style. But it,
that's what Nier Automata does.
Yeah, very much like Nier Automata as far as the style in the game.
Right. Maybe Nier pushes the different experiences when you replay 2, 3, 4 times.
Right. Yeah. But,
well, so there you go. You might want to try that out. We've just heard today that I don't know. It's the Wall Street Journal reporting that Zelda is coming to smartphones, which I don't know if I'm happy about. I mean,
depends what it is.
Exactly.
I kind of fell off Fire Emblem Heroes really hard. Because it is Fire Emblem, it is there, but the thing that I love about Fire Emblem is like building up your team as you progress through these missions, and every character kind of gives you, it has a different viewpoint. The coolest things about Fire Emblem is being able to, if you have a person on your team that you think could maybe convince someone on the other side, it's all planned, but a character on the other side, named character, you walk over with them and talk to them. The best example of this is in one of the games, you had, there's a swordman that's on the enemy team, and he's kind of like, they start the mission, he's like, I'm not a big fan of this group or whatever, I'm just a mercenary. And you go talk to them with one of your healers, a female healer. And the healer is like one of your, you need that character, and you're throwing her into enemy lines in order to talk to this person. So those kind of things, with the way that Fire Emblem Healers worked, is everything, you just kind of like got a random heroes or a couple of random heroes and stuff like that. And that works really well if you want people to keep buying your microtransactions, but it doesn't really do anything for you know, those of us that are higher class and don't subscribe to microtransactions in that way, you know.
Right.
So,
right.
It depends on what it is. If it's good, it could be good, you know. I kind of hope also that it doesn't have to be always online like the Super Mario Run game did. Mm-hmm. Because that was kind of a bummer in for that game for me at least.
Yeah, I agree. I completely agree. Yeah. I mean, it's going to depend. You're right. If it's a Zelda game, then maybe. If it's, you know, Link's Match 3 and, you know, that, whatever. It really.
Did you ever play Oceanhorn?
No, but everyone says it's Zelda for iOS.
Yeah, Zelda on iOS, yeah. It was pretty good. I never finished it, but I played enough of it to kind of get the feeling of it, and it's pretty good. So it's not like it can't be done, you know.
right. Yeah. No. Absolutely. I mean, but I don't see Nintendo going out and putting like an actual adventure Zelda game on the smartphones, which is why I'm not holding my breath. I think it's going
to
be a
you
Zelda.
Have to say it, though. Do you have to say it out loud?
All right, another thing I can say out loud is people have no idea what the Switch is. And so this is a Nielsen study, which, you know, whatever, it's not necessarily 100% reliable, but only 7% of their people who are the people participating in the study, it's non-gamers, age 13 years old or older, only 7% knew what the Switch was. Over 50% knew what the PlayStation 4 was, and 41% knew what the Xbox One was. So it's not people who are completely unaware of what the the games, game consoles are, but 7% for the Switch, you know, it's funny. We live, I guess, in our gamer bubble, and I wouldn't expect it to be non-gamers. I wouldn't expect as many of them to understand what the Switch is as, you know, people who understand what the PlayStation 4 is. But 7%? I mean, already PlayStation 4, only 50% of non-gamers know what it is. How can you not know? You know, well, it's like, do you know what, I don't know, what a movie is? Do you know what an iPhone, of course, everyone's going to know. But it seems like more than 50% of the non-gamer population should know what a PlayStation 4 is. Maybe if they had asked what a PlayStation is, the answer would have been much higher.
Yeah, and remember, it's only 50%, like 1 and 2.
Well, you know? Yes, I understand that, but
yeah, so it's just every other person doesn't know. So you just need to turn to your neighbor and say, can we please talk about our Lord and Savior Sony PlayStation 4, please? But as far as the Nintendo Switch, that number doesn't surprise me. The reason why it's like such a big deal is because the Wii was such like a fantastic thing right out of the gate, and everyone and their mother wanted it. The reason why I'm not surprised by the number is it's only been out for 2 months versus the PlayStation 4 and Xbox, which has been out for like 2.5 years, 3.5 years, somewhere like that.
3.5, yeah. No, you're right. I mean, I think the thing is, again, it's a reflection on our bubble.
Yeah.
For us, like, the Switch is enormous. It's really surprisingly popular. And for regular people, we haven't had a Christmas with the Switch yet. I think by next Christmas, by the next holiday period, a lot more people will have heard about the Switch.
And I think Nintendo's marketing is going to shift away from like 1-2 Switch, which is the only thing they're really marketing, into like Zelda and Mario.
Yes, absolutely. They're gonna,
and Mario Kart, especially ARMS, maybe a little bit, but those two. Like capstones, I guess, to their marketing push. They're going to show like 10 out of 10s and this game is the best game since sliced bread kind of thing for Zelda.
And sliced bread was already a really good game.
That was a great game. but yeah, so they're going to shift their marketing towards that, and that's going to make it become much more in the mindset of people.
Well, I think towards the holiday period, we're going to have Mario and Zelda being pushed like nonstop.
Yeah.
And we're going to see Mario Odyssey at E3 too. So we're going to start getting hyped.
They announced that they're having their big conference on the 13th this week. That was one of the things in the news.
Yeah. And it's going to be mostly Mario Odyssey. So
yeah. And they said that they're going to show off a lot, if not all, of the 3DS and Switch games that are coming out this year. So it's interesting that they're still have a little bit of 3DS emphasis. I guess, did you talk about the 2DS last week at all?
Yeah.
The 2DS XL?
Yeah.
That's an interesting one, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's not unusual for Nintendo to finish, you know, pressing everything they can out of
the
format, and it's a good, you know, it's a good that, format for the DS thing, family.
That 2DS XL looks really pretty.
You know, that's funny. That's what I was saying last time. I was like, I have a 3DS. I don't need anything else. But I looked at it and I was like, maybe I should get one. But
it's cheaper than the 3DS XL or new 3DS or whatever it is.
Of course, yeah.
So if there are any games that you really are dying to play from that are exclusive to that, like Xenoblade or the ones that are really crappy on the old 3DS, like Hyrule Warriors, the 2DS would be the one to play it on, just price wise.
I guess, yeah. I mean, I still have a hard time recommending it to someone who's an actual gamer, but because there are so many.
If you don't have a 3DS, the
Switch, right? So
yeah, but if you don't have the 3DS, if you don't have a 3DS, you never play a 3DS, and you're like still wanting to, then the 2DS I think is the best option.
Oh, of course, because there's no question.
There's the backlog of games that you can play in the 3DS is incredible.
Yeah. So, All right. Well, I guess that is going to be it for us. A bunch of stuff we discussed. I don't know how much news there's going to be for the next show. We'll see if we do one or if we just wait for E3 to wash over us. We'll see what happens. But until then, where can people find you, Ed?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at @Adesis, and that will be in the show notes. I stream live usually Monday nights around 7 o'clock Eastern time. This week I'm finishing up the very tail end of Valkyria Chronicles. I've been playing Valkyria Chronicles on the stream for a good 2 months or so. So I'm finishing that up, and then I'll start whatever else kind of floats my boat coming up here.
Vanquish.
So maybe Vanquish. Vanquish would be a good choice.
There you go.
So yeah, that's how you find me.
Cool. Thank you, Ed. And for me, it's Not Patrick on Twitter and on Facebook. You can find the show at FrenchSpin.com, and you can also find the Phileas Club there, a show where we talk about world news with people from different countries, different places, different cultures, who might think differently on things. The latest one we did was about the French election with different people from France. So if you think you want to find out more about this incredibly important election, because it's basically defining Europe and thus the world, you can go check that out. It's available at FrenchSpin.com, and it's called The Phileas Club. That is going to be it for us. We will talk to you again in probably a couple of weeks, and if not, at E3. Talk to you then. Bye.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.